Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Super J-Cast. I'm Joel, joined by Damon McDonald. It is Thursday, the 2nd of July, 2026. This is episode 415. And, oof, Damon, how about that England performance? I was sweating on that. I tell you, that was the most embarrassing performance against Congo since Sanada at Wrestle Kingdom 17 in Yokohama. Whew, I tell you what, Damon, that's the worst Congo encounter since Tim Curry entered the lost city of Zinj. Oh, I'll tell you what, Damon, that is the worst Congo gameplay since Jumping Jack Software got the IP for the Sega Saturn. Oh, I'll tell you what, Damon, that is the worst performance against Congo since Pat Barry at UFC on Versus 4. Listeners, you will hear a different opening to the show depending on, we've got this Super J-Cast algorithm, which is going to pick up on your interests, your hobbies and browsing habits. So if you're a fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling, you're going to hear a different one. Or if you're a fan of the 1995 Michael Crichton film adaptation of Congo, you're going to hear that one. Or if you like Sega Saturn games, you'll hear a different one. Or if you like UFC from the late 2000s and early 2010s, you'll hear that one. Very expensive bit of software there. So we need money to have Super J-Cast Patreon, everyone. Football, the World Cup. This is going all over the place, Damon.
We're investing in this show, and he dropped his microphone again.
I can't hear Damon anymore, which means I may be having another headphone issue.
Oh no!
Let's see.
Oh no!
What's going on there?
We've had nothing but issues with connections and him hearing me and people
headphones connected again. Right, let's remove that. She can no longer access her laptop with with her headphones. There we go.
There it is.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Welcome, Damon. It's the Super J-Cast. Hello.
Well, listen, get on the microphone. You got to fix the microphone because it's a little, you sound like you're
it's the wrong way around. It's pointing the wrong way around. It was pointing backwards.
There you go. There you go. That's right. It's pointing backwards. Like, what the fuck? How long have you been doing this show, Joel? I mean, you're talking, you know, oh my God.
I told you, I didn't realize that was a problem for an embarrassingly long amount of time. Sometimes I'd record and it would sound great. Sometimes I'd record and it would sound like complete arse. And it turns out I just, the bad ones, I had it pointing the wrong way around.
You are an asshole. You are an absolute fucking boob.
I know.
Are you kidding me?
In a lot of ways, I think I'm a very intelligent man, but then in many more ways, I'm as thick as pig shit.
No wonder your wife couldn't get pregnant. You were putting it in her butt the whole time. Sorry, dear.
She'd let me. Come on.
Yeah, I'll eat more protein, see if I can fucking up my sperm count or something. Like, I'm not pregnant again. What's going on? I can't walk. Oh, Joel. You're a character of the game. A character of the game. All right. So the bottom line is we still need all your money. Please subscribe to Super J-Cast / Patreon, whatever the fuck it is, and yeah, continue supporting this fine channel so Joel can learn how to use a microphone properly after how many years? 3 years? How many years have we been doing this together? Over 3 years, right?
God, yes. But 2018 we started, so we're coming up to a decade of this, Damon.
Holy shit.
I do remember the first episode we recorded from a hotel room in Taiwan, I was at the time. I brought my new microphone with me, plugged it in and everything, but then on Audacity forgot to select the setting choosing that microphone and instead selected the internal laptop. MacBook, yeah. The laptop one, and it sounded like shit. So I've learned nothing in the past 8 years, Damon.
Well, I will say this. You do have a full agenda each and every day. You got two little ones running around. You have a full-time career.
Don't make excuses for me. I'm a fucking idiot, and no. I should be criticized for it.
No, you should not. Maybe the backwards microphone thing, that might stick a little bit. I might have to lean on that one a little bit.
It wouldn't matter which way round I oriented it.
Why would you think that? Like the hardware
has a metal mesh on it, and admittedly it's different to the mesh, the front facing one. But I just thought, well, okay, if it's got a metal mesh at that side as well, that must mean that's also good to record. But it turns out it's not, and I'm a tit.
What do you think? What do you have? A microphone baton? Like, what the fuck? Like, seriously. It's one end. So, now, what microphone do you know has two ends that you record in?
It will make sense if I sent a picture of it, but I'm not going to do that because that's bad audio. Right. Listeners have had enough of that, and we're trying to get them to pay for this because now the Patreon money's being split. So we need more fucking subscribers. And I know there's going to be people sitting at home listening to this who have not paid us a penny. And to those people, you disgust me. Turn off. You're not allowed to listen to the Super J-Cast anymore until you get your fucking wallet out and pony up. $10 a month. Do it, or I'll find you. I'll fucking kill you.
Watch out! What? We can't say that on. Can we say that? I mean, probably not. All right, look. I feel bad now. See, I always feel bad because you were like Scrooge McDuck.
The perfect opportunity to milk the freeloaders and get them.
Oh, yes, I would love to. I would love to because there's plenty of value there. I mean, for Christ's sake. We were talking before we came on the air, you know, it's not like we're being alive. Well, in some ways we are. You get the point. We were talking about all the stuff that we have planned for G1 and schedules and all that stuff. So, listen, that, the deli, the deli's worth 10 bucks just in my mind.
But there's more good, there's even better stuff coming on the $10 feed from you, so in an area that I wouldn't even dream of dabbling in, video and recording stuff like that, live, you know, from the arena. I don't know what it's going to be, but I know it's going to be good. So listeners, you are definitely going to want to be on the ground floor for that one. And it's nothing. It's such an insignificant amount of money. What is $10 in this day and age?
Especially now in with G1 here and plenty to talk about and plenty to sink your teeth into. So
daily audio.
Yeah.
Right. I did daily audio last year and it was fucking great. Best in the business. There's no one's doing it better than me. And even then, that was when I was doing it every day and I was exhausted and burned out from doing it. And now you're going to hear from both of us because we'll be splitting it between us. So we're going to be fresh. We're going to be rested. Each of us coming in with hot takes and different perspectives and angles. So you don't want to miss that, honestly. Like no one else on the planet is going to be, and you know, miss me with these weekly podcasts that, welcome to our weekly show. There have been four G1 shows since we last spoke to you. So let's go back and talk about a show that happened 6 days ago. What did you think of this match? No one cares. No one wants to consume G1 reviews and content that way. You need, you deserve, if you pay for it, instant. Well, not instant, near instant.
Pretty instant.
Fairly quick reaction. You want to be hearing those takes quite immediately, not exactly immediately, but a little bit immediately after you've watched the show. Not a week later, because a week later, you've watched it. You don't give a fuck what happened a week ago.
You've heard it all. Yeah, exactly. And again, in a shocking turn, something that I don't know who I am at this point. There will be video content. There'll be an Instagram that you can follow along.
I feel like I should say this as well. I know Joe Lanza does very good G1 audio, but he doesn't like New Japan. And he's mean about it, and he says unkind things about it that it makes you and us and everyone feel sad and bad. Now, I'll say bad things about New Japan, but when it's deserved, right? So forget that. Listen to mine. Give me the money. And he's got enough, right? He's got enough subscribers. And mine's better because it just is, all right? Okay?
All right.
So, yeah. Plus that, plus Damon's video, plus Instagram. What this is mad. We should double the price of it, if anything. I feel like I'm getting robbed. $10 a month. That's absolutely nothing.
Hey, I will say this though, Joe Lanza did help out tremendously. The money still keeps coming in. I can't believe it. Thank you to the great Joe Lanza. There hasn't been an Unmasked since, but again,
he doesn't like the Knockout Brothers. So imagine what that's going to be like consuming daily G1 audio when he doesn't give Oscar and Yuta Ice the love that we will. That will be really upsetting. It will be traumatic for everyone if they're working really hard and he's saying, "Oh, I don't like it as much as other people." That no way, bad.
No way. Well, I mean, I'm going to be honest. If they are not up to snuff, they're going to hear it. They're going to hear it from me, that's for sure. I have no allegiance. I have no. It's going to be straight from the heart, straight from the mind, body, and soul that you're going to get these takes. So it should be fun.
I will adjust my takes based on what the paying customers want to hear.
What do you want to hear?
I'll do a little poll after each show and say, what kind of review would you like here? Would you like me to say it was great or perfect or bad? And then that's what you get.
It's like it's almost like a cameo where you get personalized audio. You know, it's, you know, a little short blip, and we'll start charging cameo monies for said content. All right, yeah, listen, in all seriousness, fucking, as Joel would say, get your fucking wallet out and let's go.
Right, so how about this FIFA World Cup? You, USA, you knocked out Bosnia and Herzegovina. Are you all on board the hype train?
Are you talking about the football, or are you talking about just bombing in general? Because we might have. I haven't really kept up on the news, my news feed. Yes, a big win. I saw somebody got a red card, though.
That's an ex-Arsenal player, Flo Balogun.
Is that right? He's one of our better players, from what I understand.
Yeah, that might be a bit of a miss. Who are you playing in the next round? Is it Belgium?
Yes.
Yeah, they're not very good. We should probably...
Okay, we should move them over. All right.
And but there's one dangerous player you need to watch out for, and that's Arsenal's Leandro Trossard. If there's going to be danger from Belgium, it will be from him. So keep him quiet and you'll be fine.
All right. And England's still in it. Brazil's still in it. France is still in it.
We are going to be playing Mexico.
Ooh, that's going to be a tough game.
Stadium in the next round, which is going to be...
That's going to be tough.
Yeah. Well, they've got a very impressive record there. They've like lost twice in the last... I don't know, a few years or something. But then I looked at all the teams that they've beaten, and it's all other like CONCACAF teams. So it's like beating teams like Jamaica and Honduras and Panama and El Salvador. So once I scrutinized it, I was like, actually, this doesn't look that impressive. But the altitude thing is going to be an issue. And our players are probably going to be sucking wind after about an hour. So I just think it's a great occasion. Like, this is exactly the sort of thing you want to see in a World Cup, and as a football player, you want to be playing what is fucking
there it is.
What is essentially an away game to Mexico in front of their fans, and how much the football means to them. Like, what an amazing experience to test yourself as a professional footballer. So yeah, it will be intimidating, but that's, you know, that's, I think if you've not got the stomach for that, then you shouldn't be a footballer in the first place. So agreed. I think it's going to be a really absorbing game. I think it'll be very close, very competitive. I do think our team is better. I think we should win, but do I expect us to win? Not necessarily, because we've been pretty unconvincing so far. So I hope it's going to be a great game. I'm expecting lots of goals, like maybe a 2-2 draw that goes to penalties or something. It's going to be at 1 a.m. here on Sunday night. So there's a talk about, you know, do
1 a.m.
in general, do we let children watch it and maybe start the school day a bit later? And are we going to keep the clubs open and things like that? So
1 a.m. start. Yeah. For you guys. Oh, that blows.
Ooh. That's nothing, man. I mean, I'd lived in Asia for nearly 10 years. I'm used to getting up in the middle of the night for football games. I was born on it.
Yeah, listen. What do you think about the theory of there'll be more pressure on the Mexican squad than England because of the home field and the fans and 90,000 fucking maniacs, you know, wanting the win? It's a lot of pressure. And
are there maniacs in the stadium, or is the stadium going to be full of like businessmen and influencers and like OnlyFans content creators? I don't know if there are actually maniacs in these stadiums these days. But
well, now that I'm a content creator, Joel, I can chime in.
Yes.
I cannot believe the financial investment I made on this fucking, I'm there for 3 days. What am I thinking? I have a camera, an Osmo. I have two sets. No, I have two. I have two microphones, two of those little lavalier microphones. So my audio quality will be great. I'm such a fucking twat. I can't believe the investment. So yes, as a content creator, I can safely say yes, there will be plenty of content created. But I think Mexican fans come out. I mean that they're a pretty solid fan base, I would think, right?
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely expecting there to be a good and hostile atmosphere. I'm counting on it. And maybe that it might be the kind of game state that suits England, because we've been struggling with very well-organized teams who sit in a deep defensive block and don't come out to attack much. But I think Mexico, they're going to be coming at us from the start of the match, and that might suit us to hit them on the counter-attack, and there might be more space for our attacking players to work with. So I don't know. I could, any outcome is possible.
It's plausible.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, who's playing today? Is there anybody playing today? Because, well, first of all, how is your heat wave? Is everybody okay? Is everybody all right with your sweaty buttock cracks and non-air conditioned cottages?
It's all right for now. It's going to go up a bit to 27 on Sunday. Then the following week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 26, Saturday, 28.
Would you like to know the temperature for the past yesterday, today, and tomorrow here in the greater Philadelphia region?
No, let's not talk about weather. Nobody cares.
I care. It's 104 degrees Fahrenheit.
Woo!
104. Yes, for 3 days. It will be.
I've just Spain have doubled their lead against Austria.
I'm talking about Fahrenheit here, buddy. It's very uncomfortable. But the air condition is popping because we're USA, US fucking A, buddy. I haven't left the house in 3 days. And I won't leave the house in 3 days. All right, very good. Where should you take us first, Joel?
Let's talk about the forbidden door.
What?
Okay. The forbidden door. We've smashed it open. There's splinters everywhere.
Wow.
It has been well and truly decimated at this point.
Okay.
Tony Khan hosted another one of his hit shows from the San Jose SAP Center with an attendance of 9,082 people. I think this was, like, big picture thoughts. I think this was fine, like, from a New Japan fan's perspective. We got four matches involving New Japan talent. So there was Driller Malone against Daniel Garcia. There was
in his tryout match.
The audition. So try out for him, try out for Walker Stewart. Shingo and Titan were in a tag match. There was Zach against Kenny, and there was Shota against Pac, which I think is a perfectly acceptable level of New Japan talent in that show. And I see complaints about there not being more New Japan talent. But I think since the show conceptually expanded to be also encompassing Stardom and CMLL, then they can kind of get away with not having as many New Japan people there. And it's a big discussion point, like why more New Japans don't get booked for the show, and like who's to blame here? Is it New Japan's fault for not making new stars that Tony Khan wants to book on a show, or is it Tony's fault for signing all the stars that New Japan did make, or is it the fault of both of them? Like, if they put more New Japan wrestlers on the show, would it sell more tickets? I'm not sure that it would, but like personally, I'm all about just cool random matchups. I don't think there has to be a story behind everything. I think my proof of concept match, the one I always go back to, was that I think it was a pre-show tag team match with Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee against Desperado and Kanemaru, which was completely random, but it was just absolutely brilliant. Like, it just kicked ass. For no one would have necessarily expected that match to be that good. So I would personally just like a whole card of just like random select matches where you just, you know, picking people at random. I don't really care who wins or loses. I just want to see cool matchups. And I think if they were a bit bolder with that and maybe took a punt on wrestlers who might not be household names in the US, you know, putting, you know, an Oleg Bolton or a Oiwa or a Uemura or someone like that there who, you know, might not necessarily move a huge amount of extra tickets amongst the Yankoid fan base, but I think they'd certainly get themselves over and would have exciting matches and the crowd would get invested. But again, like, Tony Khan has got to make economic decisions based on his own company. And I think one of the key points here is he has got such a bloated roster as it is that he is, I think, struggling to give meaningful card space to the full-time guys that he's got, let alone giving opportunities to other wrestlers. So I think that is the main concern for him. Like, can he keep his own full-time roster of talent happy rather than, you know, necessarily doing New Japan any favors? And there's also the point, like, you know, maybe we'd be probably better off with fewer New Japan guys going on Forbidden Door, because then that's just going to probably accelerate the possible soft jump for them joining AEW in the future anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's always in the back of our minds. I thought the show was here's the thing, like, I don't consider this this is not part of, and it doesn't feel like it has in the past. It's not like this is a part of the New Japan ecosystem, so to speak. These are just cool matches on a show full of cool matches. I do my best to just leave it at that. It's a cool show with cool matches and potential. Ooh, well, that's something that we might not have seen. Could it be more of that, like a different level? Yeah, of course it could. But that's always been a complaint. And it probably will always be, because there's a certain level of booking protection that has to occur. And I get that. That's fine. I don't think everyone on the New Japan roster has to be there. I think it could be select, you know, 4, 5, 6, if you're going to do like multi-man tags, you know, that's fine. Joel, I was always under the impression of, all right, let's take a walk down memory lane. So, you know, in the past, my wrestling exposure growing up was, you know, syndicated television shows. And I would say the vast majority of them were littered with squash matches. And then you would have an occasional angle, and you would have an occasional big, like, arena marquee match that you knew was either A, going to be a title change, or B, some type of angle or something going on. And, you know, at least in my pocket, that was kind of like the catalyst of tape trading, in the sense of, how many times can I see fucking AJ Petrucci lose to, you know, get squashed, or Steve King, or whatever random fucking job guy you wanted to throw out there? And then, you know, you always were like, oh man, I mean, that's why people wanted Mid-South back in the day, and that's why people wanted Memphis back in the day. And, you know, as things kind of got cooking in the 80s, You know, Crockett would throw in every once in a while. You know, you'd have some pretty decent stuff. But by and large, it was angles and big matches, you know, for title changes occasionally. You get Japanese tapes. You get New Japan tapes. You get All Japan tapes. You get FMW tapes. You get – and you kind of see how Japan structured their shows. And it's like, you know – maybe not everything from top to bottom, but on their big shows, that yeah, you could say that, you know, everything top to bottom was like killer. And the people that are now in the wrestling business grew up on that concept of, oh, why can't all wrestling be like this? Why can't the first match be great? You know, why can't the second match be just as good? And can we get even more and all of that? And that was always kind of like the want. But the want was like wanting the new Lamborghini, but you didn't realize that, well, the value of the Lamborghini depreciates the minute you fucking drive it off the lot, and the insurance on it is probably higher than your car payment, and you know, just all the things that go along with it. Yeah, the dream of owning the Lamborghini is great, but it's all the fucking shit underneath that you didn't consider of, oh, maybe it's not a great idea. Like, you're not getting groceries in your fucking Lamborghini. Okay. My point being is this.
What was the point?
The point is this, Joe, is that the show was the equivalent of, like, this idea of I wanted pro wrestling to be like this show at one point in my life, but I don't necessarily think that it's something I could handle all the time. And I know it's weird for me to sit here and be like, well, what do you want? Bad wrestling, dude? No, I don't. I just feel like it's like you can't be at an 8 or a 9 the entire show. You just can't. And that's what this show was. It was an 8 or 9 the whole time. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm never – maybe I'm just getting old. Who knows? But I just felt completely burnt out. Like, I was like, I had to watch it in doses. What I saw was
the pacing of these shows is absolutely horrendous, Damon.
Like, right.
This show went on for about 6 hours. And the second match on the show was about 27 minutes long. I was like, fuck me. This is egregious.
Right. It was just like, it was like, have all the treats, you know, don't have one, have them all. It was pro wrestling gluttony. Now I'm not even saying that's bad in individual spots because, okay, if it's every show, yes. If it's just a show that is, and again, I use the term throwaway show, but it maybe for AEW, it's part of their long term calendar year progression of pro wrestlers. For me, it was, all right, I've got a couple guys in there in a couple of matches that as a New Japan Pro Wrestling fan, I'm going to watch and be interested in. And they were good. Like Zach and Kenny, I thought was great. It was just one after another, and it, like, here's another delicious treat. Here's another delicious treat. And I was like, oh, geez, I can't handle it all. My tummy's starting to hurt. But yes, I just remember sitting watching the show and thinking back of when I was younger and thinking, this is what I wanted, and why doesn't it hit the way that I thought it would hit? And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there are a lot of people in pro wrestling that had similar experiences as I did. And again, this is the dream, so to speak. And I don't know if the reality of the dream equals the fantasy of the dream, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does feel like really self-indulgent, and it would benefit from some executive oversight. Someone's come along and say, right, sorry, you guys have got 13 minutes, that's it, rather than it seeming like every match can go as long as it wants to go and people are just doing the same like epic finishers with them kicking out of everything. And it just, a lot of the matches I was quite enjoying and thinking, oh yeah, it's kind of building up to a natural climax here. And oh, this is actually pretty good. But then it would go on for like another 7 minutes of guys, you know, promoing in each other's faces in the ring and doing death moves to each other. And I was like, oh, okay. At least I remember why I don't like this product now.
Right. I mean, that's it. Again, I understand that this Forbidden Door show is there to showcase a lot of different talent, and everybody wants to get their shit in, and nobody wants to be told that, yeah, you're the guy who's going 10 minutes and you can't do all this stuff. But like, you know, if the second match is doing every fucking match or every fucking thing under the sun that you would expect in a main event, then it just feels diluted after a while. Like there's only so many times you can push the endorphins button, the dopamine button. I don't
know. Look at these match times, right? So this is with the main card, right? First match, 17 minutes, 50 seconds, 26 minutes, 30, 18 minutes, 10, 18 minutes, 15, 18, 45, 16, 45, 24, 55, 30, 50, 35, 30.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Again, like the crowd was eating it up. I haven't heard a bad review on the show personally. Not that I've gone out and looked for it, but I haven't seen it. And at the end of the day, I thought the show was good. Let me take that back. I thought the matches were amazing. I don't know if that necessarily means that the show was good. The show was good. I don't know. It's just too much. I feel like a fucking old man saying it, but it was just like, nothing meant anything. Nothing meant anything. At a certain point, I was just like, well, I mean, why don't you just get in the ring and fucking shoot him? Cause I don't know what else you can do that's going to top what happened in the second match, third match. It just went on and on and on. But again, the matches themselves, do you think there was a bad match?
Yeah, I thought the Ospreay Swerve match was diabolical. Like by the end,
really, really,
everything I hate about Yankoid wrestling.
Yeah, it was a lot. There was a lot going on.
did you like the Will Ospreay's Bane cosplay?
I know everybody's got to do.
I've got a good wife. So here's what I did to treat her. I took her upstairs and I smashed the life out of her, bruv. Oh.
Again, everybody's... I feel like I'm just picking on AEW to pick on AEW, but I don't know. Like, I turned off this show and... I don't know. Maybe... Well, I know it's not for me. I know it's not for me.
Can you imagine, David, like the peak New Japan, sort of 2017, 18, 19, 20, that era, main event of Wrestle Kingdom, and big anticipated IWGP championship match, Kazuchika Okada versus Tetsuya Naito. Okada comes out dressed like Spider-Man, and Naito comes out dressed like Luigi from Super Mario Brothers, because those are their favorite.
All right, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, Joe. Just bear with me. We are dealing with an absolute egomaniac, but Inoki coming out
and
across
the fan base who are all suffering from brain damage as well. So there's
well, okay, that's fair enough. Inoki coming out on a cross. I mean, to be fair, some of Muta's entrances were very elaborate and over the top. I mean, we had Shinsuke coming out with fucking ninjas and dancers.
Yes,
and
he was coming out as himself, right? It was the character Shinsuke Nakamura who had grown and created and curated this, his own gimmick of what the wrestler Shinsuke Nakamura was. He wasn't copying something that is more popular and successful than he was.
Kenny. I mean, that's a...
Kenny did it. No, Kenny's the worst. Yeah. Kenny's patient zero for this shit.
Right. Right. Yes. Correct. Yeah. It's not for me. It's not for me. It's not for me.
Right. So, we should talk about Walker Stewart here because he did a lot of commentary on the show. And I know I was supposed to be magnanimous and praise him. He's annoyingly good at his job, right? He's fucking brilliant at play-by-play commentary at such a young age. And it is a matter of time until he's in either of company, AW or WWE. I think he's going to be able to have his pick, actually. So if this was his audition, then, you know, passed it with flying colors. And you know, how long are we giving him until he's gone from New Japan?
I mean, it feels like it's a matter of time. I mean, it's not like hasn't been trying. And not just trying, but like when given the opportunity, succeeding. Yeah.
This is not me having a dig at him, by the way. Like he's excellent at his job. And I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sake. Cause I know that we're going to
stop doing that. Yeah, please. Because we want your, yeah, we need you. Now
you
again,
a little bit worse on purpose, please. Just for a few more years. Just
right. Get us over to this hump. Come on. Yeah, he did a good job. He did a real good job. No doubt. And it didn't feel like, at least in the beginning part of the show, that he was, you know, he was on a three-man booth.
And he was better than everyone in that booth. But he's the best play-by-play announcer on the planet. There's no one better than him.
And he's only, like, he's only going to get better. Now he'll, and by better, I mean do it the company's way, you know, figuring out all that nonsense. But like, it's not like, I mean, when Kevin Kelly, he would do the Forbidden Door stuff. And I thought he did a good job, but if I'm being honest, I felt like, he did three or four matches, my thoughts were, it's just a fucking matter of time. You know what I mean? I really did. I felt like it was just a matter of time. So, I mean, congratulations to him. He's young. He's put in the work. I can't say that he hasn't put in the work. And I can't necessarily say that his time, especially in the beginning with New Japan, was this smooth sailing process for the guy. But he's handled it, and he's ridden that storm. And, yeah, I mean, I think, again, as much as he will sit here and probably get on Twitter and say, I'm New Japan through and through and blah, 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 and I'm not going nowhere. Well, let me tell you something. A 20-something-year-old from Oklahoma, you can be in your bed the same night on some of these AEW shows, and that's pretty nice. As you know, as the frequent flyer miles rack up going over to Japan, there's only so many, you know, 14-hour flights, you know, you have in you. And yeah, I think it's just a matter of time, to be quite honest with you.
And also a matter of time, while we're talking about that, the first match on the pre-show was Driller Maloney defeating Daniel Garcia, 10 minutes, 26 seconds. Again, felt like a tryout match. Not only that, but also sort of like a charm offensive Tony Khan offering to Driller Maloney, being like, hey, this is what you could have if and when you join us. Like, this is the start of the soft jump. You know, kind of fly over here, have some of my lovely money. You can win a match against the guy who, you know, people were talking about Daniel Garcia being a big prospect not so long ago. You know, getting the chance to get an impressive win in front of the fans, I thought it was a pretty good match. So again, I know we've got guys locked down to contracts here, but we all see what this is, right?
Right, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong, but I it's my understanding that Tony Khan pays for hotels and shit like that. And I guarantee the hotel is nicer than the hotel that they're staying in.
He says please and thank you to the wrestlers as well.
Well, that goes, you know, politeness goes a long way, Joel. It really does. Yeah, I mean,
he says, "Well done." Afterwards, "Well done. I liked your wrestling. Yes. You're a good wrestler, and I like you."
A pat in the back. There you go. Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. Look, there was probably a lot of that. You know, there was probably a lot of that going on at Forbidden Door. And look, you got to give Tony Khan credit, at least in the sense of he does make it, taking even the bank account that you might receive out of the equation, just the idea of accommodations being taken care of, travel being taken care of, just the working environment, you know. And again, there's a big difference between working in front of 1,300 people and 9,000 people, and being on television. And you know, when you tell your friends that you're a wrestler and you're on TV, oh, where? Oh, New Japan World, as opposed to, yeah, turn on TNT. It goes a long way. So, yeah, it's a matter of time. Matter of time for Driller.
Again, at least with this, the 3-year deals in place, there is a clear timeline, an opportunity to build them up, make them look strong, make them into as big of a star as you can, and then get them to put over a few people on the way out when you know exactly when they're leaving. What pisses me off is when there's all the uncertainty and they don't seem to have any idea when the guys are leaving, and they get strung along and they just walk out the door without paying it back and contributing anything towards the next generation of wrestlers coming through. So, you know, we get it. We understand this is part of the pro wrestling ecosystem. It's been like that forever. We're not expecting these guys to stay with New Japan. We don't want that, but hopefully a bit more clarity on how long they're staying and maximizing the utility of that up to and including the point where they leave the company. I don't think that's too much to ask.
No, and I would assume that some of that, or at least I would hope that, you know, our new owners have that concept down. In the sense of they learn from the past mistakes, and hopefully that'll be somewhat part of the past, and maybe a little bit of a different way of dealing with that situation, I would hope. Because, yeah, I mean, that's look, I like to have fun as much as the next guy, Joel, but, you know, some of the problems that I have with Forbidden Door shows is just like we just talked about, these shows, I don't want them to be showcases for guys on the way out, you know? I don't know. I don't know what the solution is to that, to be honest with you. Until New Japan can be competitive with pay and perks and everything, it's going to be a hard sell. I'm just being honest. It's a hard sell to tell someone, hey, stay here, or be, you know, as opposed to across the fucking Pacific Ocean, you know, you're 3 states away from your bedroom and you're making more money.
Saying that. We're not saying that at all. Again, all we want is just having that clarity to tell some stories and have them leave the company in a satisfying way that benefits the people that are staying. That's it.
Yeah, but okay. So you're the pro.
The guys who they had before, like when Thingy was kicked out of the Bullet Club, AJ Styles, right? They knew he was leaving, so he went out, and on his way out, he put over Kenny Omega.
Right. I mean, you would like that. You definitely would like that. I think times, as much as we sat here and talked about Forbidden Door and how pro wrestling has changed in ring, I think even outside the ring, it's changed in the sense of people protecting their brands and people protecting who, you know. Okay, so you're pro wrestler and you have a pretty high spot in New Japan, but you are going to leave and go to AEW. This is not like it was before where okay, I wrestled in Portland and I'm on my way out, so I'm going to lose to the top guy, but nobody's going to fucking see it because I'm in Portland. I'm going to Florida and nobody sees these, you know, nobody's going to see this. Or again, that's why, you know, that's why it feels like back in the day, Japanese stuff was a little bit more exciting because you got shit because they weren't afraid that people were going to see Andre versus Hogan or, you know, wacky Dusty Rhodes and Bob Backlund. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't concerned about that because they're like, nobody's going to fucking see this. Now everybody sees everything. So it's like, all right, do I want to lose on the way out? You would hope that they would be, you know, as the old timeies would say, professional. But what is professional at this point? Like, what does that mean? And it feels like the rules change all the time. And again, if I'm, you know, a guy in New Japan who's had a spot and done well and been successful and I've been wooed to move on and, you know, double my money and all the things that we just talked about, do I want to put somebody over on the way out? I don't know. Again, I feel like the rules of what you think would be the right thing to do in pro wrestling, that has changed. It's not the 80s. It's not the 90s. It's not even the 2000s. Like, it's just a different fucking world we live in.
Yeah. Not even just wrestling. I think that's a global issue writ large, isn't it? The sense of doing the right thing is, for some reason, seems to have disappeared across the society over the last, I don't know, how long are we talking? I'd say the last, I mean, I think, 12 years, maybe, something around that. Can't quite put my finger on what it was that prompted that slide into immorality, but there we go.
there you go, Joe. All right, we'll take your calls on old man talk after these messages.
We also had Shingo and Titan. They were in a three-way tag match with the Young Bucks and the Sky Team. It's good fun. I mean, not a huge amount to say about this. It's nice to see Shingo and Titan getting stuff to do. I think both of them... Well, Titan is definitely underused in New Japan. Is Shingo underused in New Japan Pro Wrestling? I don't think he is, actually. I think he's used appropriately.
I think given where we need to be and where we want to be, yeah, I think he's probably right where he needs to be, if that makes any sense. I like, we're not giving him another world title run, are we?
No.
We're not talking global. Like, he's there at this point to be a person who you have to get through to get to the top guys. Yeah, he's a gatekeeper
and a tag guy.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, he can still be great. Don't get me wrong. And he can still be put in great programs. Absolutely. But no, he's not. I don't want him to be a top guy. He shouldn't be a top guy for this company right now. And that's not, has nothing to do with talent or whatever. It's just we have a future we have to build for. And Shingo's not going to be around for 10, 5, 10 years. Who knows? So, no, he's right where he needs to be.
We have Kenny Omega defeating Zack Sabre Jr. in 26 minutes, 30 seconds. Very good match.
That was great.
Didn't quite live up to my expectations. I think I was probably kind of wish casting what I thought prime Kenny Omega, like 2018 Kenny Omega against 2025 Zack Sabre Jr. And of course, right, in a lot of ways, sort of ships passing in the night. They never quite met each other whilst they were both in their primes. They had a match at, I think it was the 2018 G1 Climax. I can't remember G1, anything about it, but that was obviously at a point where Zack Sabre Jr. wasn't the brilliant, well-rounded, complete wrestler that he is today. But even so, like, whilst it might have fallen short of some people's expectations, mine included, of thinking and hoping this could be a match of the year candidate, and I don't think it was. It was still a bloody good match.
I loved it. I thought it was really good. It felt important. It felt like for something that really wasn't there, they did their best to at least make it feel more important than, hey, these are two, like, if you're into the pro wrestling, you think you probably have these guys high on your list. And now they're wrestling, so it should be great kind of thing. They gave it a feel of importance. Yeah, you're right in the sense of I'm probably guilty of doing the same of, you know, turning back the hands of time and thinking, but even then though, I do think this match was pretty great. I thought, and I say this a lot, and it shouldn't be surprising, I think. Like, I say this like it's some kind of fucking revelation or some, you know, wacky hot take or something, but Kenny Omega deserves a lot of credit in this match. I thought he was outstanding. And again, that's not taking anything from Zach. Zach's probably my favorite wrestler, you know, in the world. I thought Kenny was really strong here. And there is something to be said. And I don't know if it was the miking. I don't know if it was just the way the entrances occurred or whatever the case, whatever you want to say. Zach kind of felt a little cold going in. Like, it wasn't like this buzz for Zach. And Kenny came out. And again, it's his home base. I mean, you know, I would hope people in the promotion enjoy watching Kenny Omega. And they did. But even after that, it felt like Zach didn't quite feel like a guy that was 100% over. And again, that might be just the TV, the production, whatever. Maybe live it was a different story. It just didn't feel like he had that same level of aura. I don't know. Maybe. But I thought the match was very good. I was shocked that it was, you know, what, third, second? Shocked. But and maybe they had a plane to catch. Who knows? But I thought it was very good. I thought it was really good.
We also had Shota Umino, who defeated Pac by pinfall, 18 minutes, 15 seconds, successfully retained the IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship. And there was a little stare down with Jon Moxley afterwards. Some reports suggesting that he was initially supposed to be facing Gabe Kidd on this show. But I think it's worked out for the better here, because I thought it was a really excellent match. I thought Pac was a perfect opponent for him. He made Shota look like a beast. I thought I think there are a lot of ungenerous readings of this match from people who don't know ball, who are saying, oh, you know, it's a Pac carry job. And but anyone who's been paying attention,
a carry job? Really?
Can see the improvements that Shota Umino has made over the last year. And he's continuing his upward trajectory for me. In a lot of ways, I think wrestling in front of the American crowd, he almost seemed more confident, like he was kind of free of the shackles of expectation and pressure that seem to often come with him when he's performing in a big spot in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He looked like he was having a really good time out there. I thought it was really tremendous match, like really gnarly table spot as well. They did sort of Chekhov's table where they set it up and we'd all forgotten about it. And then Pac just picks him up and just absolutely smashes him through the table when we were least expecting it. That was just really fantastic. And again, these are the sort of matches that I think are really beneficial to the concept of Forbidden Door, where you have two very high quality singles wrestlers going against each other. And I think this does a lot for Shota Umino. And I think I'm sort of pondering the intentionality of having him getting a big spot. So there were two New Japan wrestlers getting singles wins on the show. One was Drillin' Maloney. We've already talked about that. You know, we're all expecting him to make the jump when his contract's up. And Shota Umino as well, getting a win against a guy who, I think that's a decent win, winning Pac. I know he's not exactly a push commodity, but I think there's a lot of value in that. And I'm, again, thinking, so why him? Why Shota? Why was he picked for this spot? Do I think he is someone that Tony Khan is grooming for to jump to AEW in the future? Not necessarily. I don't. Not to say that I don't think he would. I think after Okada made that jump, then, you know,
anything's on the table.
Bets are off. Yeah, anyone could go. So I'm not ruling it out. But I do think this was Tony Khan throwing New Japan a bone and trying to help Shota Umino there. And it makes me think there are plans for Shota Umino this year. Now, he still has this global title, and we're going to talk about that. He is defending it in a few days' time. What do you think is in store for Shota Umino for the rest of this year and even projecting up to Wrestle Kingdom?
I mean, obviously he's in a marquee match at Wrestle Kingdom. I think by the end of the year, he'll have a program with somebody that makes it important. I don't know if that's, you know, if that's a Yuya feud bubbling. I don't know if that's, if they wheel in John Moxley. I don't know. Who knows? I don't think they do at this point. Maybe they do. I don't know. I don't think anybody's going to fall over in their chair with this take of he's going to be a centerpiece for now and for a long time.
G1 winner?
It's on the table. It's on the table. It wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me. One thing that I got out of this match, and I'm glad that you brought it up, that he felt more comfortable. It looked like he felt more comfortable. And I just find it pretty amazing, his entire run so far in New Japan, we talk about, well, you got to be dragged through the mud a little bit before you can fucking reach the stars and, you know, be the guy. You got to go through adversity in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Everybody feels like it does. The rocket ship is a very rare thing that we talk about. And even the rocket ship sometimes goes a little astray and then it gets back on course. Once again, old Uncle Damon is going to wheel back the hands of time. But, you know, every single match of his is televised and people have access to. And people can wag a finger. And people can say, he's good, he's not, he's terrible, he's great, he's got the future in the palm of his hand. And if they, if they bank on him, the fucking company's going to fall apart. It's amazing how much of that has been in the public eye, in the sense of, you know, you would work house shows and, you know, only people, live people, you know, live audience people would see. And it's, I don't know. I just can't imagine being a guy who needs to learn the art of pro wrestling in this day and age where every fucking step of the journey is documented and televised. It's got to be madness, quite honestly. He did look comfortable. Maybe what we're witnessing with him, especially this year, is really truly the bud blossoming. And, you know, like it's we're living it in real time. And the problem is that if you check on that bud every single day, you might not think that plant is growing. But then if you checked it every week or every other week or every, you know, so often, you know, the growth seems a little bit more quick, I guess. I guess my point is this, is that this is a guy growing and becoming a focal point of this company, and it hasn't always been the smoothest of rides, but it's getting there. Like, you could see that it's getting there. You might not like him. You might not like him, and that's okay. But you got to admit, this year has been a real blossoming for the guy. And maybe I wasn't before. Maybe it wasn't something where I was even conscious of. Like, I'm rooting for the guy because it's there. Like, this is a guy that, you know, kids were running away from the guy as he's handing out glasses to them. Like, nobody wanted any fucking part of the guy. The guy gets booed out of the fucking building challenging for a title. It's getting involved in a three-way. like it feels like those days are well in the rearview mirror, and he's really becoming comfortable in the idea and the concept of eventually, kid, we're going to give you the keys to the car, and you got to learn how to drive.
It's got to be more than okay, I'm comfortable with you giving the keys. It's got to be demanding the keys and being like, I deserve those fucking keys. Give me those keys now.
Yes, agreed with that as well. Yeah, there's a bit there, and I think what we saw before was, yep, here's the keys, and everyone's like, wait a minute, he's got the keys. Why is he getting the keys now? I had to wait 50, you know, whatever. Yeah, no, it's him saying, give me the fucking keys, I'm ready. So yeah, you're seeing it. You're seeing it in real time, and that's exciting, I think.
Yeah, definitely big things coming. Maybe a bit of hot potato with that belt. Again, we'll preview the upcoming show, but wouldn't be surprised. In a way, I think if he loses that belt, that might make me a bit more optimistic about his chances of winning the G1. And the Mox match coming up, I don't know when that will be. Like, is that going to be something happening in the States? Could that be a Wrestle Kingdom match? Having showed it against, hopefully, a more energetic and enthused and committed John Moxley, because I think the previous match they had was quite disappointing. And I don't necessarily think that one was Shota Umino's fault, but certainly that coincided, unfortunately, with a period in John Mox's career where he was lacking motivation. So I think they've definitely got a much better match in them, and you know, if that's the kind of blood and gut style intense bloody brawl at Wrestle Kingdom, I think there'd be a lot of value to that as well. Or you know, maybe Shota wins the G1 and is challenging Yota Tsuji. It feels like that's quite a protected match that I think could do good numbers as well. So yeah, so I think an exciting time to be a Shota Umino fan, and someone that I think we need to be watching very closely during the G1.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I really love G1 over and above the fact that, you know, a lot of nights you're getting at least a nugget or two of really solid pro wrestling. It's also, especially this year, it's okay, you're going to get a wide variety of different opponents. How are you going to handle this? How are you going to handle this situation? How are you going to handle that situation? What's this match going to look like? And I'm not even saying all of them are going to be gems, but this is really a crash course in, okay, you've got 12 singles matches stretch out over the hot summer of Japan. Let's see what we got. And we could say that for a bunch of people in this tournament.
Burning Hammer says, who's your G1 final match this year? One realistic matchup and one if you could dream book it out of the participants this year. So Head and Heart, give me two possible G1 finals.
I don't have the blocks in front of me, but I would think eventually somewhere along the lines, I mean, it block structure being what it is, Joel, could we possibly see a Yuya Shota final?
Yes, we could. I mean, the fact that it's the top two going through, I think it's right. A1 against B2 and then B1 against A2 means that right. I think any combination is possible.
To me, that would mean the most, I would think. That would be, you're killing two birds with one stone. I guess, but that, it might not be this year, but I kind of say, why not? Why not this year? I'll go with that. I mean, something crazy preposterous. What would be crazy preposterous? I'm what trying about? To make it crazy preposterous, but also somewhat realistic. Like Aaron Wolf.
Yes. That's what I was going to say.
Okay. Okay. Against?
Shota.
Maybe. I mean, that would be crazy preposterous. That, I mean, boy, if Wolfie could pull that one off, that'd be something.
They are in the same block, actually. So I don't know. I kind of feel that the final, I would prefer it to be two guys who have not already wrestled each other. How about...
Okay.
And I know they've wrestled each other for the TV title, but Shota Takeshita rematch.
Okay. Would it be weird if I said Yuya Takeshita?
No, I just proposed that as well. That was a really good match. Not last year's G1. I think it was the one before that where Yuya... That was the G1 where Yuya got injured. It wasn't the match he got injured, but he had a really fantastic match with Takeshita during that tournament in 2024.
Yeah. I would have no objections to that. Again, I think my wild fantasy one would be Aaron Wolf mowing down some people. Here's what I want out of Aaron Wolf. I don't think he's going to win. All right, let me ask you. Do you think he wins more or loses more?
Sorry, who are we talking about?
Aaron. Wolfie.
Yeah, I think he comes out with a winning record.
Okay. And again, we'll do a lot of these as we build up to G1, but like those wins, I think, are going to be things that I want to, you know, like I'm curious as to where they're going to come, who they're going to come against. Give me a scale of 1 to 10. Do you think he makes it to the semis? Long shot.
No, I don't. A four.
Okay, a four. Is he the most? Is he your most? Excited to see what he does in this tournament.
Yes.
Yeah, me too. And I'd add, I would probably say Shota might be second. You know who might be third for me too? Bolton. I'd like to see. Like, I want to see. I don't hate him. I just thought that it was.
You called him a Kazakh idiot who should fuck off back to
what?
His country. That's what you said last time.
How dare you? I would never say something like that. No, I'm. I want to see some progression in his game. Definitely, no doubt. And here's a perfect time to do it. Yeah, I'm actually, he might be third on my list of curiosity how he's going to perform. Yeah. Okay. So there's my pie in the sky match, and there's my where I think we might land.
All right. Let's preview a show that is coming up very, very soon. And it is a show that will be taking place this Monday.
Oh.
Now, there is a show on Saturday, but scrolling through the card for that, there's nothing interesting happening on that. I don't even know if it's televised. But we have July the 6th in Korakuen Hall with quite a few significant matches here. So we've got some undercard fluff. We've got Yasuda, Despi, Taichi, Yuya against Sho, Doki, Sanada, and Ren. Second match is a Oleg Bolton comeback match with Tatsuya Matsumoto, Goto, Aaron Wolf, and Oleg Bolton. So again, note that Wolf and Bolton teaming again against Daiki Nagai, Yuta, Ice, Shingo, and Tsuji. Third match, we got Tiger Mask final three-way tornado tag match with Jado and Tiger Mask versus Gedo and Taiji Ishimori versus Dick Togo and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. That actually looks like it might be brilliant.
It could be.
I think that'll be really good.
I mean, because there's so many
shitters involved. Like having Jado and Gedo and Dick Togo and Kanemaru all involved.
And Tiger Mask.
That is going to be brilliant. Don't miss that one.
Grumpy old man match. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's going to be good. Okay.
Right. Fourth match, we've got our G1 Climax B Block play-in match. Oscar versus Yujiro Takahashi.
Come on. It's got to be Oscar, right?
Yes. The only thing that pause is the fact that Yujiro did seem to be working a bit harder and being given more showcase spots this year. But no, I can't even entertain that as a possibility. It must be Oscar winning.
Oh, please. Let me at least entertain it. But this company, it's got to be Oscar, but I'm scarred to put all my chips on there. Like, they're just weird. They might do something stupid, but yeah, let's go Oscar.
Then we have G1 Climax A Block player match, El Fantasmo versus Ryohei Oiwa. So at least in a kayfabe sense, this one is relatively even. Although I do think just from a booking standpoint, leaving Iowa out of the G1 climax would be promotional malpractice. And again, if I'm trying to make sense of it, perhaps ELP is hurt or sick, or, you know, doesn't want to or can't participate in G1 this year. I think if ELP wanted to be in G1, he would be in G1. So I don't think, you know, this is him being punished or anything, or he's been like, oh, what the fuck, I'm not in G1. You know, they could have easily given him the spot. The previous match we talked about, like, he could get Oscar's spot and no one would bat an eyelid. So I think my suspicion is that he is electing not to take part in this year's G1 climax, probably for health reasons. I expect it to be a good match, and I expect Iowa to win.
Yeah, all the things you said, I'm on board with. And again, we can only assume the health stuff. But yeah, I mean, it might just be a case of I don't think I can, I don't think I want to do the grind, let alone can I do the grind. And again, we have Iowa who's priming ready. Yeah, it would just make sense to have Iowa get that win, and ELP can rest up. There you go.
Six matches, IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship, Shota Umino, his second defense against Gabe Kidd. This is a fascinating match. I'm really looking forward to it. I know all the criticism I've leveled at Gabe Kidd for the confusion in the presentation, the inconsistencies in the character. I think he's found something that is at least coherent and consistent now, and it works. So it doesn't stop him from being a really good pro wrestler, and I hope they can tap into the heat between the two of them that was allegedly taking place several years ago. I don't know anything about that.
No, we don't know nothing.
In front of a hot Corrigan Hall crowd.
Don't DM us. Don't DM us. We don't know nothing.
I'm scared. Don't do that.
Don't slide into Joel's DMs and ask how you heard about shit. No, don't do that. All right, anyway.
Anyway, well, what are you talking about, Damon? It's absolute fiction. I think this should be a good pro wrestling match. I'm looking forward to it. They're going to hit each other hard. I think the crowd will be into it. I think Gabe might win. And I think it could be a dirty win. I don't know if this is going to tie into the, like, the Death Riders thing or John Moxley. I don't know if they do something as crass as John Moxley appearing on the big screen at Corrigan Hall. Is there a big screen at Corrigan Hall? I don't know.
They would have to move some seating around to have the screen where the bleachers
they could
are.
Put a monitor up somewhere to distract.
Yeah, come on.
I could see Gabe Kidd getting an unclean win and giving Shota a bit of motivation going into the G1 climax, because they are going to face each other. When are they facing each other in the G1 climax? It's not the first night. Because
it's not the first night.
He's not there.
He would never work illegally. Nope. Yep.
Shota's working Zach on that show.
Can I ask a dumb question? As you look for that. Let's just say, okay, obviously visa issues, blah, blah, blah. So he can't get into the country is the problem, correct?
I don't know if he can't get into the country or is not legally allowed to work in the country.
Okay. Can I throw something by? He's going to be at the show. He's going to do a run-in. He's going to cause somebody to lose and technically not get paid, air quotes, because he was never on the show. Can we skirt around that?
I'm not sure
the Trump administration would go for that one?
Okay. If that happens, I'm screen capping it and sending it to Donald Trump directly on X.com.
Truth Social, sir. Truth Social is where you find good old Donald J. All right.
No, I don't know when. I'm trying to find when they're wrestling each other in the G1. It's certainly not early on in the tournament. I'm just clicking on random G1 shows here, trying to find it, but I'm not.
Find Gabe versus...
Could it be back at Corrigan Hall? That might be a good spot for it. Nope, that's not it.
God damn.
This is not good audio. What about August 13th?
Ah, it's always good audio. This is the best part. These are my favorite moments.
I can't find it. I can't find it, so I give up. But the point is, I think Gabe might win the belt here by nefarious means, and then Shota will get his win back during the G1, and then possibly challenge for the belt again after destruction in Beppe DeMarco. Win back the belt, defend it against John Moxley. I don't know, something like that. Do we like that? Is that good? Do you like that idea, Damon?
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it.
You hate it, don't you?
I don't hate it. My only concern would be...
You hate my idea and you hate me by extension.
Stop, please. Does anybody have Colin Miller's phone number? I don't know. I'm sorry. Actually, I have it. I haven't talked to him in a while. But that's par for the course for
Get
me.
Get him on the Patreon.
What's that?
Get him on the Patreon.
Yeah, I'm telling him, you want to talk to me? $10, buddy. Yeah. Patreon.
Pay to play, motherfucker.
Okay. Yeah. Pony up. The only problem I have was I want to have him drop the title right before G1.
It's only the white belt. Who cares?
I know. You just, I don't know. I mean, it's possible.
For the white man.
Ah, the mad lad. I'm not going to say that there's a title change. You might be right, but I'm going to go with a non-title change.
All right, then. And then we all have the main event of that show with the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match. Yo, the 100th champion, his first defense against Frankie Akira.
Yeah, that should be good. I mean, again, I think Yo, when it's time to lace up the boots, can be okay. He can give you something, and maybe Acura finds another gear in him. Maybe. Who knows? Or it might just, as we talked about last week, turn into fucking nonsense because, hey, here's an opportunity that I can do nonsense. I'm leaning for the first option. I think this will be really good, actually. I'm looking forward to it. This show is fucking tight. I mean, this
very
is
very
cork. Yeah, Corkin show. Ooh, that's the sixth, you said? That's a handful of days away. That's a nice little primer for G1. nice little lead up. So, yeah, that's a pretty nice show.
Are you envisaging a title change?
No, unfortunately not. No, I think Yo's got some legs. He's very popular, Joel. He's very popular.
Is he better as a chaser than a champion, though?
No, I think he might be better as a champion. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Let's see what he's got. Well, love Akira and I want Akira to have the belt, I mean, I just think that ultimately the destination is going to be Fujita, but I don't know when and where we get that. And I could see
what's a bigger money match.
Yeah, I could see him winning it off Yo. I could see him winning it off Akira. Like, both are perfectly plausible. And I think I'm just sort of giving up trying to book the junior title in a sensible way because it's just been so nutty over the last year or so that I'm kind of waving my hands at this point.
Yeah, it's chaotic. I think Yo and Fujita is the money match. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we're going to wind up. So, yeah, I don't know if there will be a title change here as well.
And we also have a fairly big show on Tuesday, the day after that, also at Korakuen Hall, July 7th. This is Tiger Mask's retirement match show. Wow. We only have two matches announced for this show. We've got Tiger Mask versus Dynamite Kid Tom Billington and also Tiger Mask versus Black Tiger for Rocky Romero. So both of those are 5-minute time limit matches. But yeah, pretty cool, nice pair of matches there to go out on. Do you think we might see Tiger Mask pass the mask on to a new person during the show?
Good question. No, I don't think we will. Because you could strike while the iron is hot in the sense of everybody's going to have Tiger Mask love. And if he does pass the torch there, the mask, if you will, that would have probably a bigger response and a bigger buzz and a little bit more people talking than a random, hey, this guy's now going to take up the mantle, you know, 4 months from now. In the same breath.
He hands it over to, Mastura Yasuda or someone at the end of the show.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's an instant rub. I'm not saying Tiger Mask is this fucking massive deal. Like, you know, it's fucking Sayama, but, you know, there's still some juice left in that.
It would be a shame to just use that altogether, wouldn't it?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they could sort of leave their options open where he could just leave the mask in the ring and then that can be...
Somebody steals it. Somebody just picks... Like a janitor comes and picks it up and he's a new Tiger Mask. Like one of the vendors, you know, folding chairs. Hey, there's a mask in the ring. I could be the next Tiger Mask.
Now we're talking. Let him cook.
Yeah. That'd be great if it was a giant. That'd be so fucking hilarious.
Good wrestling ideas. Next time AW do a plunder match, a microwave popcorn, a full, fully fresh microwave bag of popcorn, hot popcorn. Someone getting curb stomped into a bag of freshly microwaved hot buttery popcorn. And have that one for free. And then
yeah,
slamming
people stall. Yeah. I was going to say
slamming someone onto the kernels and then rolling around in agony going, ouch, it's painful.
You know how somebody's climbing the fucking ropes and they got to balance themselves and everybody's standing outside pantomiming. Oh, we're staggering around waiting for the guy to get set so we can catch him. They got to wait for the guy, for the microwave to fucking count. Yeah, they're waiting for the last set of so it doesn't burn. That would be brutal. The hot popcorn. I forget what my point was. Tiger Mask. I think it's more likely though that we'll have him ride off into the sunset, and that'll be that. And I don't think they passed the Tiger Mask torch. They could. They should. They won't.
Now we're going to ride off into the sunset. Bye, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.